Okay, so my name is Jacqueline Garcia. Today is February 22nd, 2018, and I am here with Sal Romero. So, okay, when were you born?
April 30th, 1978.
And where were you born?
I was born in a very small town called El Dormido, which is in the state of Guanajuato, Mexico.
Mm-hmm. And what are the names of your parents?
My dad's name is Salvador Romero, same as mine, and my mom's name is Ofelia Romero.
Mm-hmm. What do they do for a living?
So they have been in Harrisburg for 27 years, and they've been working in poultry, in the poultry industry.
Mm-hmm. So can you describe how your journey to come to the United States happened? What year, how old were you?
Sure. Sorry. So I came to the U.S. in 1991 at the age of 13, and that's because my parents had moved to Harrisonburg, mm-hmm. Obviously like many immigrants in search of a better life, mm-hmm. And they had some friends and a few relatives that had moved to Harrisonburg, so that's why we came here.
Mm-hmm. And how did your relatives, how did they know to come to Harrisonburg?
Mm-hmm. So both my dad, you know, my dad and a lot of my relatives were used to working in the farms in the West Coast, and they did seasonal jobs in the orchards all across the West Coast. But then, you know, they would always have to go back to Mexico and come back and migrate regularly. So they wanted to find a more steady job, and they had some acquaintances who moved to Harrisonburg to work in the poultry plants. And, you know, word of mouth travels fast. They found that there was jobs here that were year-round, and that's why you came here.
Mm-hmm. How many brothers and sisters do you have?
So I have three sisters and one brother.
And are you the oldest?
I am the oldest. Okay. I'm the oldest of
them. Okay. Mm-hmm. So where did you grow up?
So I grew up for most of my childhood, from about age, since I was born to about age 9, I was born in a very small town, a very rural area, where my parents were born, and that was in Mexico, in a little town called El Dormido, and everyone knew each other, lots of family members, extended family. One very small school, and we didn't even have a grocery store. Mm-hmm. And when I was growing up, we were just getting ready to get portable water. Wow. I think we had electricity at that point, but it was a very, very small town in the outskirts of a mountain. Mm-hmm. Very pretty.
So in Mexico, what were your parents' jobs there?
So my mom was she stayed at home, mm-hmm. and cared for us, and she also did some work, like most of the people who lived there, in growing corn and beans and some other vegetables and fruits, mm-hmm. And basically people just kind of did that to be able to have a sustainable way to feed themselves.
Mm-hmm.
My dad, when he was there, he didn't work, he just came to visit. So in his off time, when he wasn't working in the U.S., he would come to us. Mm-hmm. In Mexico.
So how was your, do you remember at all your journey to coming to the U.S., that move, mm-hmm. for you guys?
Sure, yeah.
Can you describe that a little bit?
So my mom and dad left us behind, that is two of my sisters and myself, and came.
And what year was this, sorry?
This was in 1991.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And they left both, two of my sisters and myself, with an aunt. Well, they came to the U.S. with my two younger siblings, you know, just to kind of maybe test that out a little bit, to kind of see if this was a place they wanted to come to.
Mm.
So 6 months later, they decided to bring us along. They had already stabilized a little bit here. My dad, they were living with another family, but they were getting ready to buy a small trailer to live in. So my dad had a job, and my mom was staying at home, caring for my two-year-old brother, my brother and my sister. So when it was time to come, he asked my granddad, my paternal granddad, to bring not only my two sisters and myself, but some other relatives mm-hmm. to the border to meet us, to meet him there.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember I was very excited. My sisters were really excited. The bus trip was probably 14 hours, I would think,
mm-hmm.
from our hometown to the border in Texas. And you know, I remember getting to Texas or to the border on the Mexican side, and just kind of waiting for my dad to meet us.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, we needed to cross the border, so we were asked to go to a hotel and to wait there for people who my dad had had paid some money to get us across.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember. Seeing this woman with a younger child, probably 5 or 6, and they, I remember them coming to the door and knocking on the door and say, identifying themselves and then saying, you know, are we ready? Are we ready to go? And so we hopped on another bus that took us to the outside of the city, more in the rural area,
mm-hmm.
and then we just started to walk. And we probably walked for about 30 minutes, 15, 20, I don't even remember exactly, but I would say no more than 30 minutes.
So this is in the desert, you guys walked?
It was
or?
Right outside the city, okay. actually. I mean, it was, I remember there were some hills and, you know, country-like setting, but it wasn't,
mm-hmm.
It was not intimidating in any way or form. You know, things have changed quite a bit. So back in the early 90s, I would assume it was a lot easier to cross without much issues, but we crossed, I remember, and then we came straight into a store on the U.S. side, and we waited there for a good while until a taxi came, and the taxi put us on, you know, multiple taxis, I would assume, but I remember getting a taxi, and then they drove us to a hotel,
mm-hmm.
And then once in the hotel, my dad and my uncle, who had come along for one of his sons, we all got in the car. It was actually five young kids, and my dad and my uncle in one car.
So your dad and your uncle came from Harrison River
mm-hmm.
to Texas
yeah.
to meet you guys.
Yeah,
okay.
And so we drove from Texas to Virginia. I think it took us a few days.
Mm-hmm. And was that part of the trip hard at all, or was it mostly...
No, it was not hard at all. I remember it was hot.
Mm-hmm.
We were kind of crowded in the back of the car. But it was all fun because we were coming to America. And so, you know, we were beginning to enjoy some of the foods and we're beginning to enjoy the just the landscape, the differences, and the experience was all different.
Mm-hmm.
So it was for me, it was particularly exciting because I was going to be with my parents. That I had not been with regularly. You know, my dad
mm-hmm.
would always come for a few months, he would leave, and he would do this every year, since I recall. So, it was fun.
Was it easy for your dad to go back and forth to come see you guys? Mm-hmm.
So my dad was a legal resident.
Okay.
So my dad was able to adjust his legal status because of the 1986-87 amnesty.
Mm-hmm.
He was a good worker, and he had good references from his, bosses, the farmers, and all over the, mostly in Washington State. But I guess he was able to meet the requirements, which included some letter of recommendations
mm-hmm.
from people that you had worked with, and so he was a legal resident, so he was able to travel back and forth. At least, you know, by 1981, he was a legal resident.
Mm-hmm.
So he had he didn't have to cross illegally. He was able to get across without a problem.
What about your mom?
My mom, all we had was a Social Security card,
mm-hmm.
all of us, my mom and my siblings and myself. And he was able to do that because he started the process. As soon as he became a resident, he started the process to kind of get us a status. But obviously, that didn't happen until many, many years after and later that the process started to move along. So when we first crossed the border, all we had was a Social Security card that was not authorized for employment.
Mm-hmm.
It's very clear on the card, it says not authorized for employment.
Mm-hmm. So only your dad could work?
Only my dad could work. Yes, legally, yes. He was only the one able to work. And so at that point, I remember my parents saying, well, you know, once we get into the U.S., even if you don't have documents, and even if we get pulled over, because I'm a resident, they won't be able to take you away. And I don't know if they said that just to comfort us, but I remember that was something that, you know, I heard multiple times.
Mm-hmm. What would you say was the hardest challenge coming across?
I mean, I think... For sure, now that I reflect now as an adult, maybe at that point I did not recognize it, was leaving a number of friends, leaving a home that it was actually a home, right, that my parents had bought in a bigger city where we had moved for a few years, just leaving everything there, school, leaving obviously... relatives, grandparents, that was the hardest thing, I believe, just to begin to recognize that, hey, I don't know when it will be the next time that I'm going to come back and see mm-hmm. see them. But, you know, I think at that point it seemed like I was more excited to be with my family mm-hmm. than really acknowledging what I was leaving behind.
So once you guys arrived in Virginia, mm-hmm. what was the process from there?
As far as
adjusting to the living situation, the job situation.
Yeah. So, you know, when we got here, my mom and dad lived with the same uncle who had three children. So their family was five members. Our family was 12, I'm sorry, seven, which made 12 people in a two-bedroom trailer. And so, you know, in the beginning it was difficult because, you know, we didn't have the space, which we were used to having a small house, but we had a house. So that was an adjustment, which only lasted about 6 months because my dad and both mom and dad are really hard workers, so... They soon recognized we needed to get our own place. So yeah, I believe maybe within six months to a year, we had our trailer to which we were able to live for a number of years. But you know, just adjusting to that was difficult. You know, adjusting to the fact that we had to go to school, we didn't speak the language. My dad spoke English, but he didn't feel as comfortable going into the schools as well. So the food was different. I remember going to school and not liking the food.
How did your dad learn English?
Just at work, you know. Mm-hmm. He's just one of those quick learners who was just determined to learn it, and did very well.
Where'd you go to school?
So I went actually here in this area. I went to Broadway High School, which is 15-20 minutes from here. I went there and graduated in 1996. My first year here in the U.S. was in eighth grade at one of the county schools, John C. Myers Middle School, which is just a minute away from the old high school. It's that old high school which I graduated from is no longer a high school, mm-hmm. is now a middle school. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's where I went. So we lived in a trailer park right outside of the city limits. And so at that point in 1991, actually this did not even exist. There was this right here where we are sitting was, for lack of a better word, a dump, basically. You know, the city was smaller, obviously, but we did live in the county, so we couldn't go to the city schools. And even if that would have been the case, there weren't that many Latinos in this community at that point. But the school was probably 20 minutes away from our house.
And how was the adjustment to the school? Did you feel excluded at all because you were different from other kids?
So the first year, one of the people who came along with us when we first moved was my uncle, who was only a year older than I am. So we grew up almost like brothers. That's my dad's youngest brother. So we grew up, we did everything together. And so when he went to school with me, or when we went to school together in eighth grade, and he should have been a freshman in high school at that point, but they just kind of put him, kept him back to be together. When he was there, when there were like two other, three other kids who were there that we knew and lived in the same trailer park, you know, we kind of hung together, we kind of did things together, and so we felt more protected. Even when the kids didn't like us, some of the kids didn't like us, and some of the kids would try to find ways to intimidate us. I feel like we had each other to support each other, right? Mm-hmm. But he only went to the eighth grade, and then he quit. Mm-hmm. He wanted to work.
Where did he work after?
Yeah. So I stayed in school, and high school was really, 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 really difficult. I was small in stature. I didn't speak the language. Obviously, I was brown, and a lot of the kids in that school did not have as much experience with, you know, other kids who were different than them. Who, so they didn't know any better, and so they treated me, not all, but many, in a way that, you know, no one would want their kids to be treated right. So. Mm-hmm.
So the majority of students at that time were Caucasian, would mm-hmm. you say?
So the school at that point, my assumption was probably 98% Caucasian, maybe even, well, 98. There was one African-American student, and there were just a handful of Latinos, probably three or four.
Where did your uncle work after he quit school?
So he went to work at the orchard. There was an orchard just north of here, probably 35 minutes away, and he worked there while, you know, that was his first job, and then he, you know, kind of jumped around until he found something he liked better. Mm-hmm. But he was, you know, he was 15 at that point, so, you know, he was ready to take a job, he thought, anyway. And he did live in our house with my, because my dad was basically, you know, he came here with us. And then eventually he moved to another, with another aunt and lived with him while, you know, he was working.
What made you stay in school in comparison to working like mm-hmm. your uncle?
So I, you know, trust me, there were multiple times I didn't want to go back to school. It was not fun to be in school, and I didn't feel like I was making connections with people, and so I didn't want to go back. So I think maybe when I was 16, maybe in 10th grade, I believe, I told my mom and dad, I said, I don't want to go back to school. I want to get a job. Yeah, listen, look, you know, my brother, I called him brother, he's working. He already has a car. He's got money, you know, he's got a good life. I, you know, I don't want to go back. So they would say, well, you got to go back. And so they kept telling me I needed to be in school. But one, you know, one day my dad said, well, you know, when school lets out, you know, we'll get you a job, and then, you know, we'll see what you think about it afterwards. So they got me a job in the summer, I guess, of my sophomore year. And I went to work at a poultry plant where my mom was working. And my dad was there. Was my dad? I don't think my dad was there, but my mom was there. I do remember that. And the work, no, yes, my dad was there. Because he actually chose to put me, to have me do some jobs that were not really pleasant. If you're not familiar with poultry work, yeah, it's not pleasant at all. At least many of the jobs. So anyway, I remember hanging chicken. There was poop all over the place. It was filthy. It was stinky. It was not good. And so after the summer was ending, was getting ready to end, my dad said, so what do you think? You want to keep the job or you want to go back to school? And I said, I think I want to go back to school. I'd rather get pushed around and bullied than to get pooped all over my face when I'm working. So that was a good experience, I think.
Yeah, that made you learn.
Yeah, it was a good learning experience. I think he did it on purpose. But that was really the drive behind it, that I just didn't see myself doing this for the rest of my life. And sure enough, you know, my dad obviously has had an opportunity to move on and to get promoted a couple of times, but I didn't see myself in that type of an environment for the rest of my life. So,
by that time, where was your father working?
So, He was in poultry. He was still in poultry. That's all he has ever done since he came to Harrisonburg.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously he started at the line, you know, like everybody else. And over the years, he moved companies, and currently he's with Pilgrim's Pride, which is in Broadway, right next to near the school where I went to school, and he works in the HR department. So you know he doesn't work in the line anymore, but he's been able to kind of gain some status there. So he's fine now, but mm-hmm. my mom's still working on the line, so she's been there for. She's been doing it for a good while, over 20 years. Wow. Very hard work.
Yeah. Where are your siblings? Are they still in Harrisonburg? Mm-hmm.
Of them are, yes. Well, most of them are. So so Sylvia is the second in the family. She's right behind me. And Sylvia works at RMH, the hospital here, Sintera. She was able to also get an education. As a matter of fact, she's working on her PhD. She has class today. She has them on Mondays. This is her second semester at JMU, and it's a lot of work, she tells me, but it's a goal that she has. So she went to JMU for undergraduate, went to Chicago, Western Chicago maybe, I think, for master's, and now is doing a PhD. She is the coordinator of diversity at the hospital. The next sister, Ophelia, who's the middle one, she works at RMH as well. She's an interpreter. And she tried to go to college. She didn't like school when I remember growing up. She didn't like school. She was always complaining and didn't very bright, very smart, never wanted to do her homework and didn't want to go to school. Anyway, she ended up graduating from high school. But didn't go to college, and then she attempted to go to college in her, adult years, maybe 6-7 years ago. But with two kids, it was just difficult. So she kind of put a pause to that, and so she's currently not in school and doesn't have a college degree. The fourth kid, which is Erica, she has a teaching degree from EMU, Ishmael University. She is currently in Mexico, so her husband was deported, and so he was deported for 10 years. So he ended up having to go back to his home, which is a different state than our home state in Mexico. So she left a teaching job here in the city schools to move back with him. And he's been gone probably 8 years, maybe close to 9, and she has been gone probably 4. She's trying to stay here and work, and it was just too difficult to be away and for the kids to be growing up without a dad. So she is currently there, and she's doing well. I mean, you know, she's still keeping up her teaching degree. She has an English school, a little English school that she started over there, so she's still teaching. And then my youngest brother, he's currently in school at Blue Ridge Community College.
Have you mentioned that her husband got deported.
Mm-hmm.
Have you experienced any problems with, the migra, they would say here, mm-hmm. Throughout this process?
Mm-hmm. So, no, we haven't. Fortunately, we haven't. So when we got here, my dad, like I said, had already submitted the documents mm-hmm. to get our legal status adjusted. It was really a slow process and cost a lot of money. My dad eventually became a citizen, and then that helped the process get a little more expedited. So I believe we adjusted our status in maybe 1998, around that time. And so by that point, we all became legal residents. And, you know, within 5 years, I believe I became a citizen. So I've been a citizen for a good while, and so at this point, I believe I don't have to worry about anything, but I don't know.
So where do you live now?
I live in Harrisonburg.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And do you live in the same area that you lived uh-huh. before? Like, did you see your old house that you mm-hmm. used to live in?
So, no, we live on the opposite end. My kids do know where I used to live because we go by there sometimes. I still have family who live in that mm-hmm. trailer park. When I graduated from JMU back in 2004, and I had just recently married my wife that spring break before graduation, which was really nice, but at the same time, it's like, well, what are we doing? Why couldn't we just wait till we graduate? Anyway, so I graduated from JMU, took a job, and then I told my wife, I said, you know, I don't know what your thoughts are, but I like for us to get a house. and I said, we're going to get it soon. So let's give us a year. So we, in a year, bought a home, and we've been living in that home since.
Wow. Yeah.
Just made it a goal, and we did it. So
that's great. So can you tell me more about kind of going back to how you said you were working in poultry mm-hmm. for a short period of time? What was your experience with that? Like, can you give some more details
sure.
on, like, the environment?
Mm-hmm. So I worked in poultry 2 years, two summers, two different companies. The first experience, obviously, was, you know, at the plant where my mom and dad worked. And so a lot of the people that I knew that were there, we knew. So it was a lot of people that we knew from the community. And it was, in great part, you know, minorities, people that we knew. And so the work itself was really hard, very physical, very, you know, demanding. You know, obviously the lines were going really fast, and the work had to be done at a high rate.
Mm-hmm.
People were obviously nice to me because they knew I was a high school kid, and I was trying to make some money for during the summertime, and they knew my family, so people were very nice to me, I believe. But the work, nevertheless, was really hard. So the conditions, you know, were not the best for employees.
Mm-hmm.
And so my second experience was with another company, and because I did speak more of the language at that point, I was able to have a job within the plant that was much more flexible, right? Where I was floating around different places and helping out in different ways. And so the job itself is not as difficult, but I think I was able to utilize my language skills because a lot of the people who worked there did not speak English, and so I was able to help out.
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of gave me a different perspective, right? That I, as a new temporary employee, was coming in and had some privileges that others didn't have who had been there for some years. And so that company, same expectations, you know, mm-hmm. the production had to be high. So the working conditions were not at that point, were not as great because people, they demanded the best of people every day, and it's a lot of physical labor.
Were you, like, the youngest that was there? Like, was high school age the youngest of people that were there?
Yeah, I don't remember any other young Latinos that were there at that point in either of those places. Oh, yes, the first one, yes. So there was a good friend of mine who was also in school. His parents also worked at the plant. So when he heard I was going to get a job there, he said, well, I want to get it too. So we worked that summer together, but then he ended up moving to, like, North Carolina, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Was there a mixture of undocumented and documented people that were working
mm-hmm.
there?
Yeah, okay. mm-hmm, for sure. Yeah, mm-hmm. and that's still the case nowadays. Mm-hmm.
And did they have, would you see experiences of, like, you know, raids coming in out all up there?
So, yeah, I never saw myself, but I do know there were several in some of the plants, and I know that because, you know, I had relatives that were there working. Yeah, that was, yeah, the last one, I don't even know when it was, so it was years ago. So, yeah, they did have a few raids mm-hmm. in a couple of the plants.
And were most of the Latinos from Mexico, or were there other countries that they came
so
from?
So the demographics of the Latino communities over the years have changed. It used to be that the majority of the Latinos in Harrisonburg, at least in the mid-90s, were from Mexico. There were some from El Salvador. But mostly it was in Mexican based. Over the years, things have changed. Less Mexicans are coming to the U.S., you know, and we've had a significant influx of Central American, you know, families that have come. So, you know, my job with the city schools, I mean, I'm able to pull demographics, and I know that Mexican is not the largest group anymore. It's typically, you know, kids from Honduras, in El Salvador. And those are very rapidly growing populations. Mm-hmm. So
what is your job now?
Okay.
Or how did you process of getting to that current job?
So I started as an ESL teacher. I worked at multiple schools in the city, and then I became an assistant principal after I got my master's.
Which schools were?
So I was an assistant principal at Stone Spring Elementary, which is on Port Republic Road, and then I was an assistant principal at Spotswood Elementary School, which is down off of a reservoir. And then during that time, I obviously was doing some other things on the side and involved in different things throughout the community, and saw a great need for an outreach person from the division level. So I spoke to the superintendent, and he was really fond about the idea. And so for the last year and a half, almost 2 years, I've been the coordinator of family and community engagement for the division. So I get to work with all the schools in the in our division, and then I get to, you know, definitely collaborate with many businesses and employers and organizations and all.
So what does a typical day look like for you as an assistant principal of Spotswood Elementary School, you said?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you know, when I was at Spotswood, which my last year was 2 years ago, a typical day was basically getting to the school early, being ready for the students as soon as they got off the bus, and greeting them with a big smile and giving them a high five and saying welcome and glad to see you. And then once kids were in the building, you know, just kind of patrolling the hallways, but more than patrolling, you know, interacting with teachers and students. And then after that, obviously, you know, there were meetings, instructional meetings that would take place. But surely you would often see me with kids, whether it was having lunch with them, going outside to play, you know, at recess with them, waving them goodbye as they were getting on the bus to go back home.
What made you want to pursue a career in education?
So out of JMU, I was a major in kinesiology. I was a sports medicine major and became an athletic trainer. I worked in Augusta County as an athletic trainer, and not only did I do that, I was also required to do teaching of an elective. Mm-hmm. I taught sports medicine, and I really enjoyed teaching. I never thought I would like teaching. And so I did that for 2 years, but I wanted to make a bigger impact in Harrisonburg, not in another county. And knowing that the demographics were growing in our area, I felt like my skill set was really more able to fit here. And obviously, I lived in the city. I had never left the city. And so I decided to pursue a position within the city. My first job was not as a teacher. My first job was as a homeschool liaison. So the homeschool liaisons are in every school. They're bilingual personnel who work there full-time. Their main job is to be the link between the Latino families and the school. And they help with interpretation, with translations, and with advocacy for the families. So I did that for about a year. And then in the meantime, I went back to school to get my teaching degree because I saw myself becoming a principal at some point. But in order to be a principal, obviously I needed the classroom experience, which by that point I didn't have a license. Went back to school, got a license. First year as a homeschool liaison, the second year I became an ESL teacher, and I taught for about 5 years before I became an assistant principal.
So how is the experience with being an advocate between the liaison between the Latino families and the school? Was there any like specific experience that was really stood out to you?
Well, I mean, it was very helpful that I knew the community. Many of the people that would come to the school, I knew, either formally or informally, I had met them through different things that I was involved in the community, whether it was through a soccer league or an after-school program or church or whatever it was. Like I had a connection with, and again, I don't, not anymore because we've grown so much, right. But people were able to recognize who I was. Mm-hmm. And so when it came time to